Thanks for coming back. And welcome to Speaking as a Leader Part 2. I believe all of you were in the earlier session this morning for Speaking as a Leader Part 1, so I'm not going to dispense with reading of the bios again. They don't get to hear about themselves. So please welcome back Travis and John for Part 2.
Thank you. All right. Who here gets nervous? Put up your hand. Who here gets sweaty palms? Sweaty armpits, sweaty back of your knees, put up your hands. Who hears voice shakes when you get nervous? Who gets short of breath when you get nervous? Who here thinks with enough work and effort that can go away? Only a few of you. Who here thinks at some point in life you're going to get nervous again? I can tell you it doesn't completely ever go away. I've been doing this for about 11 years. I still get nervous, but I have a different relationship to nervousness. I have a different relationship to my body language and to my voice than I used to have. And that's what we're working towards today, is having a different relationship towards nervousness, your body and voice. These are now tools that you're using. So I want to do an exercise with you. Write down two names. One name is a leader that you know that inspires you with their body language, or their presence, the eye contact, with the whole presence. The second name is a leader that you know that does not inspire you with their presence. You're not going to share these names, don't worry. And underneath those two names, write down two or three qualities that they have, each. I'm going to give you a little time, 30 seconds to a minute, to write that. So two names, one person that inspires you, one person that does not, with their presence, and underneath qualities that each of those people have, two or three qualities each. Once you've done that, I want you to get together with your table and share both the good qualities and the bad qualities and talk about what do they have in common. What do these qualities have in common? Don't mention the names, don't worry about that. Talk about the qualities. What do all these qualities that do inspire you in presence have in common? And what do those that do not inspire you have in common? And we'll talk about the results afterwards. So if you're at a table with two people or just one person, move to a larger table. If you're a table with five people, that's just perfect. All right, commence. All right, take another minute or so. All right, let's bring it back. Let's bring the attention back here. So, talking about those negative qualities first, what do they have in common? Yes, they're negative. Good one. What else do they have in common?
Uninspiring.
Okay, uninspiring. Anything else?
Mm-hmm.
Condescending to you. Yeah. Over here?
Distracting,
take away from the message, yeah.
Disjointed.
Disjointed, you don't know where they're going with everything they're saying, yeah. Any other suggestions? Yeah. Unprepared, yeah. What about those positive qualities? What do those have in common?
Motivation.
Natural. Sorry?
Just a natural speaker.
Just natural. Seems like that person is who they are off stage too. Confident.
Personal connection. You have a tendency to be excited.
Yeah, when you're in her presence, you feel excited. Personal connection. Uh-huh. So if you look at those negative qualities, who are they about? The speaker or the person talking. If you look at the positive qualities, who are they about? Yeah. So a leader can be a leader, and they can be inspiring or not inspiring. And they can make it all about themselves or all about you. So what do we learn? We learn that somebody who wants to inspire their audience through their presence has to make everything about their audience. The way you move, the way you speak, should not be about yourself. You're nervous? Doesn't matter. Whatever is going on in here, doesn't matter. You should care about the other person. How often have you been in a conversation or maybe in front of an audience and you've been thinking, oh, I'm coming across weird, I made a mistake, stupid, and everything's up here. Rather than, what are they thinking? Are they getting what I'm saying? What's their reaction to the last thing I said? Are they leaning in? Am I listening to their body language? Am I listening to the way they're looking at me? Everything should be about them. So now we should view our bodies less as a value judgment of who we are, but more about a perception. How are you coming across? How is your audience perceiving you? And it becomes a tool. You can lounge on your sofa at home, however you want to. But then when you move in front of an audience or talk to somebody that you want to influence, you have to view your body and your voice as a tool that you can manipulate. And here's something that you don't hear every day. Steal more. What do I mean by that? We're born, we start growing up, and how do we learn to move? We look at our parents. And we all start acquiring these weird tics and habits that our parents have. One time, me and my brother were laughing at my dad because he was sitting upright in a chair watching TV with his arm over his head like this. Half an hour later, me, my brother, and my dad were sitting there doing this. So you learn by watching. And then at some point we turn 18, 19, 20, around that age is when body language starts grounding itself. And we say, oh, this is who I am now. And this is how I move. It's just comfortable for me to do this. It's comfortable for me to put my hands behind my back and not use them. It's comfortable for me to just stand there and talk to people. But it's not about that anymore. Steal more. Those names that you wrote down, steal those qualities that you see in them that you'd like to have yourself. And avoid those other qualities that you might have too in the leaders that do not inspire you with their body language. Steal more. So I want you to do two things. Write down three ways you think you're perceived now by people in your office, by people you talk to every day. Three qualities, how you're perceived right now.
Just to be clear.
So now, after you've written those three, write three ways you want to be perceived, the way you want to come across. Once you've written those down, turn to one partner in groups of two and talk about strategies of ways how that could happen. How could you come across that way? And it's usually about everyday life. It's not about just big presentations, public speaking opportunities. It's about those everyday interactions that you have. So how can you start being perceived the way you want to? Find a partner and talk about that. Nice to meet you. All right, let's bring it back. Let's bring the attention back up front. So, let's hear some strategies. Let's hear some strategies of what you can employ in everyday life to come across the way that you want to. Something over here. You don't know yet. Any strategies that you have? Yes, back there. Let's give our attention back here, please. Exactly. Yeah, we're going to talk about authenticity in a second. Coming across the way that you are instead of being someone else. How can you still come across as you, being authentic, while still trying new stuff. It's difficult because it feels uncomfortable. It's uncomfortable to try new things, to uncomfortable to move in new ways. Anybody else? Strategies about coming across the way you want to come across. Yes?
Have a plan.
Have a plan. What kind of plan? Yes, absolutely. Have a plan. Yes, back there. Know your audience, yeah. Anybody done Enneagram, all those personality type quizzes, any of those sorts? I'm a fan of those. I'm not a fan of the way that they're employed. Usually people use these personality tests and say, you are this type of person, and then box them in, and that's the only way they talk to them. It's a way of starting with the person. This is how I perceive you, but I'm going to be pleasantly surprised by you. And I'm going to communicate to you in that way. I'm trying to figure out how to communicate, how to get my intention, my belief across to you so that it's important to you as well. Yeah?
I think I have almost the opposite experience of what you described at first. And what I experience, I go into a role. This is how I think I'm supposed to be.
Yeah.
And that gets in the way of who I truly am and who I want to be seen as. So, you know, if I'm in this, I'm in charge. Mm-hmm.
Right, you lose that part of you who you are.
Yeah.
Yeah. What happens when we're nervous or when we try to impress and become this person that moves a certain way and has all this confidence in front of people? We lose that part of us. Very often we're nervous, we go in front of people, and we're a different person. So the goal is to become more of yourself in front of other people. Without crying all the time. Yeah. So, what is presence? If we could give a definition, we're going to talk about presence. What is presence? Well, if you could give a one-line definition, what would it be?
Confidence?
A focus point? Back there? The aura that you give off. All right, exude that aura. Any other definitions? Yes?
Being authentic.
Being authentic, yeah.
Living in the moment.
Living in the moment. So what's the root word of presence? Present. How often, even today, have you found yourself thinking about different situations, different emails, conversations, phone calls that you've had, maybe about sleeping later, some food, being somewhere else? Or while you're in the middle of conversation, you've started thinking about yourself or something else? It starts up here. Your physical body language presence, it starts with your thoughts. It starts with your mind. So giving other people the present of being present with them, that gift. So there's three different types of presence that you can employ. The first is inward bound, and none of these are wrong. We just need them at different times in life. The first is, if I'd be sitting down, I would compress myself. Everything's downwards. Maybe my feet are turned inwards. I'm protecting myself in a certain way. Maybe my voice becomes quieter, and I question my name when I introduce myself. My name is John Voth. So everything is, I'm protecting myself because you could hurt me. You're a big audience. The third way is me establishing my dominance in the room or maybe with one person that I'm talking to. If I walked around here and said, okay, presence has body language, eye contact, expression, and you all need to learn how to use your bodies as tools, okay? That's a very different way of using my presence. It's not wrong, but it's not effective in the situation. If I'm walking down an alleyway and I'm about to get mugged, then I need to establish some dominance, maybe. What we want as leaders, the presence that we want, is something that connects. It's a relationship that you're having. I can talk to you without using words. The way I look at you, the way I move, the way I position myself in the room, I can establish a relationship with each of you. Over here, there's nothing much going on over there, but I'm talking to all of you. So there's so much language going on and relationship going on without using words. So, presence is about coming across the way that you intend. It can be practiced. You can get to a point where you try new things and it becomes comfortable. So the way this goes is you'll be very uncomfortable for a while. Today's going to be about being uncomfortable, and failing boldly, trying new things. So, being uncomfortable, uncomfortable, until it becomes comfortable again. First, we're going to talk about body language. Everybody stand up. I'm going to go up on stage so you can actually see me. So when you're trying to maybe dialogue or use your body in a different way or a new way that might feel uncomfortable to you at first, it's hard to go from your old habits, however you're holding yourself or moving, into a completely new way. You need to put yourself into neutral first. What do I mean by that? So let's say you're walking up on stage, and you're about to talk to a full audience. You plant yourself first. It's a little check, and you go into neutral. You breathe in the audience, look at them, create that relationship with your eyes, and then you start speaking and moving the way you want to. So what does neutral look like? Your feet are shoulder-width apart, so right underneath your shoulder. Your knees, don't lock your knees. That's what happens when people get nervous. They lock their knees, and then blood doesn't go through there, and they faint. Go on YouTube, look up groomsmen. Groomsmen fail. There's a whole bunch of fainting groomsmen. It's funny. All right, so don't lock your knees, keep them loose. Your body is always communicating something, so this can communicate something if I'm standing here like this. What does this communicate, anybody? All I'm doing is shifting my hip to the left. So neutral, keep it here. Your chest, keep it open instead of caved, open. Relax your shoulders. Relax your shoulders again. Take your hands out of your pockets and by your side. Your head is as if you're an ornament dangling from a tree, just loose. Not uptight, not up to side. This is very simply neutral. Everybody take a breath. And then from that point forward, everything is about the audience. It's not about, where do I put my hands? I don't know where to put them in my body. Okay, so take a seat. You can do the same thing when you're sitting. You sit down, and it's an important meeting or important interview or any part where you want to use your presence. Same thing, feet on the ground. Your sits bones, which are your butt bones, are equally employed, not off to the side or anything. The hands on the table, and that's neutral. And then you can lean or do whatever you want, but it's about becoming conscious, giving yourself a check at the very beginning instead of constantly during the process. Because that's what we do. We constantly think about ourselves. We think about how am I coming across? You do one at the beginning, create the relationship, breathe them in, and then move into it. Let's talk about nervousness for a second. If I'm nervous before this course, I'm walking around outside, again, I got that heavy breathing, sweating on the head, and my voice, I can't control how it shakes. I'm not even doing anything up here yet. Why am I nervous? I'm not present. I'm thinking of being over there. What am I thinking about? Failure. So if I'm driving down a road and I'm looking at the ditch the whole time, where am I going to end up? In the ditch. So what do we have to do? What do you think? Over there? Somebody said something? Positive thoughts. Yeah. I'd move away from positive thoughts, but more towards what will you accomplish? Because what we think about is, I need to avoid this, I need to watch out for this, I need to watch out for this. These are all the parts that I need to hit. Rather, we need to move towards trust. It's a trust element. Trust the work that you put in, and trust that you will hit those elements. I did a performance at Bardna Beach 2 years ago, and I opened up Midsummer Night's Dream at the first big monologue, and a large audience. So if you miss a line in Shakespeare, you can't improvise around it. So I was nervous. First couple times through, I was thinking, gotta hit that, gotta hit that, gotta hit that, and I felt I wasn't doing well. I wasn't doing it justice. So I changed it around. I thought about the audience. The audience sees one of these plays a year. It's a huge, exciting thing for them. And so for me, I want them to hear every word I'm saying. I want them to hear the meaning I'm saying. I want them to be happy with it, rather than I want to do well. And that helped me actually shift the focus for myself. So the first thing with dealing with nervousness is that. knowing that it's there, getting comfortable with it always being there, and using it as a tool to help you inspire others, help you connect with others. The other thing is physical, all the stuff that goes on. So something that's going to help you with nervousness and preparing yourself for speaking in front of people and avoiding that is building in a ritual. A ritual that helps you get to a place of preparation and focusing on something else other than these nerves. So a ritual, different people have different rituals. Some people find they have a simple low expression that goes all the way through like this, and this is going to be so boring, I'm going to blow my brains out. So I get them to sing. They sing their favorite song to get some expression and modulation going in their voice. I, for myself, when I wake up in the morning, I have to drive to a course and teach for 8 hours. My voice is tired. I haven't used my tongue all night because I was sleeping. So what I do is I rap in my car along to my favorite song. That gets my mouth enunciating and my vocal projection out. So for yourselves, I'm going to give you some tools that you can use for your rituals. The first is a tongue twister. A tongue twister that hits almost every single vowel and almost a single consonant. So write this down. To sit in solemn silence. On a dull, dark dock. Dock, D-O-C-K. In a pestilential prison. Yeah, it's a spelling bee too. In a pestilential prison. Just write it however you think it's spelled. With a lifelong lock.
Mm-hmm.
Lock, L-O-C-K. Four more lines. Awaiting the sensation of a short, sharp shock. Yeah. From a cheap and chippy chopper. From a cheap and chippy chopper. Chippy chopper on a big black block. So very morbid, but it works. On a big black block. When we speak in front of people, we often forget that the tool that you have is your voice and your breath. These are the tools at your disposal to be heard. But we don't warm them up. We don't practice using our voice very often. So this is one of the rituals that can help. Another one is your tongue muscles go all the way down here. And very often, your tongue muscles down here are dormant. They don't get used very often. And so that's why some people come across as mumbly or quiet. So a way to warm up those tongue muscles is by sticking your tongue out and trying to say everything and enunciating so people can hear you. We're going to do that. This room is going to be very silly right now. So open up your binders. And at the presence page at the very top is a paragraph. I want you to stick out your tongue and try to enunciate every single word. Make yourself heard when you go through that. All at the same time. Work, I just wanted to see you all do that. So you can find your own ritual, though. Think about yourself. What do you have difficulties with when you're nervous, when you're speaking in front of people? What do you need? Think of your own ritual. It could be stretching if you find yourself to get very stiff. You can go into your own office and over-exaggerate all your motions and get silly and awkward so that when you're actually in front of people, it doesn't feel that awkward to raise your arm up to here, which, trust me, I've seen almost a single time I've taught. People afraid of gestures. You know how you know that you want a gesture, but you're not allowing yourself to? Is when you do this. There's these little gestures, but you're not allowing yourself to follow your impulses. So here's these images I'm creating with my hands. Can you see this? Rather than letting yourself gesture from the shoulder. There's also habitual gestures that distract your audience from what you're saying. It's a client of ours who every single time he made a point, he would drop an egg. So he goes, the first point is, and the second point is, so he'd drop an egg every single time he made a point. So there's also those gestures that you have as well. Crossing your arms in front of an audience and not using them to dialogue or behind your back. This feels comfortable for you, but the audience doesn't care. The audience wants you to connect with them and talk. Audiences are mirrors. If you feel confident, you give them confidence. How often have you watched somebody nervous, squirming on stage, and you start squirming in your seat? If you're confident, you give your audience confidence. If you're joyful about something and show your audience that, you give them joy. If you're frustrated about something and just give them frustration, they will start feeling frustration. They are mirrors. So we're going to do an exercise now to get you even more loosened up to try new body habits. I'm going to come on stage three different times in three different ways, and you're going to ask why. Why do I come across a certain way? What particular body language elements is it that portrays or this perception of myself? And then you're going to do it the same thing with each other. Hi, everyone. My name is John Voth. Today I'd like to talk to you about communication and leadership. I believe that communication can help you achieve a connection with your audience. What was I communicating? Why? Okay, but why? What are the specifics? Memorize my points? Drawn to myself? No confidence. Imposter as it walked up. There's a lot that happens here. I've worked at TED Talks for the last 3 years, and I see all 70 speakers. And just the way people walk up communicates a whole bunch about them, whether you want to listen to them or not. There's a Harvard study. You want your money back, yeah. Yeah. Ah, just my composure, right? Okay, let's try something new. Hi, everyone. My name is John, and I want to talk today about communication and leadership. I believe that the way you communicate to an audience can help connect with them. What was I saying with my body language? All right. Just trying to sell you something. What else? Used car salesman. Excited? So you got excited, positive. Arrogance. See, here's another lesson, is that you can't control your audience's perceptions of you. You can't control everybody's perception of you. And it's frustrating, isn't it? You want them all to think the same thing about you, but they're going to think different ways. There are certain elements that you can employ to avoid certain nervous characteristics or overpowering characteristics, but you'll never be able to control other perceptions of you. Okay, one more time, and then you're going to do it. Hi, everybody. My name is John Voth. I'm here to talk to you about communication and leadership. I believe the way that you communicate can help you connect to your audiences. Mechanical, pissed off, you're in trouble. Why? Let's go detailed. Why? Right. Like a robot. Stiff. Your body is always communicating. Everybody freeze for a second. Don't move. And look across the table from the people there. What are they communicating right now? You're all communicating different, and it's frustrating to think, my body is always communicating. No, that's, ugh. I don't want to always be communicating. but it is. So you have to get comfortable with that uncomfortableness. Okay, so now in groups of, how many we have? Let's do groups of three. You're going to do the same thing. If you've written scripts today in the morning, you're going to use that script. If not, if you haven't been here for that, take that binder and the first paragraph on the present section, you're going to use that. And person A, you're going to deliver it three different ways, extremely different from your own regular body language or habits. Go extreme with this. Three different ways to person B. Person B or C, they're going to be in groups of three, are going to say, okay, this is what I perceived, this is what I saw, and here's why, detailed. These are the things you did that made me perceive this. So try three different ways from the way that you usually use your body language. All right. How much time we got? If everybody could stand up, do it standing up. Standing up. Everybody stand up. Yeah. Okay. So you'll be delivering it and deliver it three different ways to your audience.
One person.
Yeah, one person three different ways, and the next person three different ways, and the third person three different ways. So very different from your regular body language or habits. So you can try what I did. Try simply nervous or angry and aggravated. Yeah, third person observing says, look, this was, and both people can give feedback on it. Yeah. Yes, yes. Okay, so you're gonna take either your script that you wrote or... You're presenting as if in three different ways. All right. Finish that version off and let's take a seat. Okay, let's all take a seat. So after having gone through that exercise, we're gonna get a bit out of our comfort zones. Any observations that you've made from doing that exercise? We had one over here. What was your observation? I'll repeat it. So he said that for their group, for everybody, it was easy to act out the nervous, uncomfortable person, but when it came to actually the dominance, that person who pushes too much, it was hard to act out for them. Anybody else have the same discovery? A few people? Yeah, as I was saying, for us Canadians, there's a lot of apology. Sorry. You regret it? Any other observations from what you just did?
John, I'll share one here. So I was watching, you know, trying to figure out what folks were up to and helping explain, of course. One of the things I noticed with a lot of people is when they went for that confident body language, you freaked yourselves out. So what happens is you step into it and you're like, yeah, you do it for about 5 seconds, and then your brain's like, you're doing this thing, stop. And you're like, oh, and then people kind of fall off. And it was interesting, though, because that's how you push past. You have to acknowledge that this is a new thing. So you step into it, you're like, okay, this is a bit weird, but I'm just gonna try it out. And then you see, did it land the way I wanted it to? Mm-hmm. So that's tough too, is to convince yourself to push through it, even though you freak yourself out, just to keep doing it.
Yeah. He had something over here. Did you have something to say? He's pointing you out.
There was a lot of nervous laughter.
We're not used to this. Not used to thinking about our body language this much. It's just, oh, this is the way I am. No, that's the way you come across. It's not the way you are. It's what you've learned the way you are over time. It's not who you are inherently. Any other questions about nervousness, voice, breath, body language before we move on? Yes?
So are you going to cover more about the breath? When you're nervous and you're trying to catch your breath,
yeah,
and everyone's looking at you, is there a quicker way other than being like, excuse me, I need to meditate?
Yeah, two things. So when your voice is shaky and you can't control it and it's doing this thing the whole time, rather than trying to control it, let it be and push. You have to push your voice out rather than trying to control and maintain that shakiness. So one thing you can do is when you walk towards the front of a room, if it's a meeting room, if it's a large hall like this, your voice is not going to the people in front of you. Your voice is going to the back wall. The people in the back need to hear your voice. So that's where your back is going. Everybody stand up for a second again. Put your hand in your stomach and give a big fake ha ha ha. Ha ha ha. Feel how your stomach moves? That's the way you want your stomach to move when you speak. Very often people speak from their chest or from their throats. When you speak from your throat, I'm going to try to do it because I'm not used to this anymore, but when I speak from my throat, it sounds very differently than when I land from the bottom of my stomach here. That's your diaphragm. So that's the goal. You're not going to get there today. But the more often you practice, you can practice whatever speech you have at home, putting your hand in your stomach and pushing from your stomach rather than from up here, because this is a very different tonal quality that I would have in this room rather than from here. If you're interested in vocal coaching, let me know. I can put up my card here. I can refer you to a vocal coach who's very good in town. Not a singing coach, don't worry about that, a vocal coach who can help you inhibit your voice. So that's one, pushing through. And simply taking a breath. It's okay to take a breath and pause. We'll get to pausing in a second. The way we feel about pauses is very different than what the audience feels. 2 seconds of breath or pausing for us feels like 10 seconds. For the audience, it feels like one. We have all these different perceptions of ourselves that can betray the way people actually perceive us. All right, take a seat. Any other questions? We had something over here. Yes? Yeah. So the first thing is movement, a strong presence comes from clarity of thought. So if you're asked in the moments or maybe 5 minutes beforehand to deliver a speech, this actually happened to me. I was at a community event, and 50 minutes before it started, the organizer came up to me, said, I know you do public speaking. One of the speakers didn't show up. Can you speak for 10 minutes about trust? I thought, yes, I can, because I know what I believe about trust. So in the script, I thought, what is my message? What do I believe that I want to share? What is the result of that belief? How can I back that belief up? And what's a story that has involved trust? I'll put that as my grabber. And I could formulate that script by using that message by using the whole script. But it starts with clarity of thought. You can't have great presence when you don't know what you're thinking. It'll come through. It'll come through in how you're communicating. Have you ever watched somebody speak and not believed any word they're saying? Audiences are clever. They're not dumb. So don't ever say anything just for the heck of saying it. So formulate that script in your head first. And then since you haven't had time to prepare it or practice it, it's all about breathing and relaxing. Rather than thinking about everything you're doing in nervousness, breathe in your chair. Take 3 deep breaths. It's amazing what a deep breath can do. 3 deep breaths, as you're walking up, breathe rather than thinking about all the things that could go wrong and that will stiff you up as you're walking. Take a breath, land, do that planting exercise, that short check, breathe in the audience, and then clear your head and just make it about them. Yeah.
Maybe I'm talking about nervousness, but how having emotion in your speech, like everybody, they don't mind seeing a little bit of emotion on the stage, but you know, you don't want to see somebody totally falling apart.
Mm-hmm.
You know, when you're count tricks to
right.
Put down some of that emotion, so you're not falling in either on stage.
So are we talking about anger or sadness or a mix of those?
Strategy.
So,
I have like 20 newscasters in front of my face with microphones, and I had a real hard time keeping them together because it affected so many people in the community. You know, like, so, you know, not so much nervousness, but, you know, like, you want to be able to have a strong presence to represent your community, but you don't want to be a bumbling idiot.
Yeah, absolutely. So yeah, emotions can overwhelm you. It starts with another mindset piece, and it goes into presence. So the mindset piece is, you know how we try to control emotions or say, I should not be feeling this? You do that very often. Emotions are never wrong. Emotions are always right. It's how they're portrayed or used that can be detrimental. And so emotions are, they point towards something. That's what they are. They are indicators to a cause. That's what emotions are. So when it comes to that situation, rather than, again, thinking about, I need to control this, I shouldn't do this in front of a camera or journalists, it's about being okay with that. Because that's the first element. That stiffens you up if you're thinking about controlling everything. But again, that failing boldly part, being okay with that. Then it comes to, if you're feeling emotional and can't control it, it's too much, there's two things you can do. First thing is, I'm sorry, I can't right now. Take a step aside. I don't think anybody who's watching that will be, well, that person doesn't know what they're talking about. That's the first option you have. The second option is breathing through everything. What happens is when we get nervous, we hold our breath, or when we're in that point, so I shouldn't be feeling something, you hold your breath and you don't breathe properly. Breath is one of the most foundational parts of your voice and how you come across with your voice. So saying a sentence, taking a deep breath rather than a short one, it's all about breath. And that'll help you maintain more of a consistency throughout it. Yeah. A couple more questions. Yeah.
You talked about eye contact. I mean, you know, we're supposed to look at everybody and remember them.
Yeah. That's the next section. I'll get right into that.
Okay.
Yeah.
On anger, like, you know, sometimes when I'm talking to my constituents, they repeatedly ask me the same questions, and I kind of get a little short. How do I control that?
How do you control your shortness? Two items. First one is, again, breath. I'm going to say that almost every single time. Use that breath. Breathe before you speak. The second thing is, if you're feeling about that shortness, that you feel frustrated, the second thing is reiterate their position and give them, well, depending on the situation, you can give them praise or some sympathy. So you reiterate their position. Tell them what you know about their position or what's happening to them or their feelings. Then you respond with what you want to respond with. That can move away from that shortness. Okay, one more question. Who had a question? Somewhere around here. Yeah.
It wasn't a question, it was more of an observation or a comment on the emotion. If what works for me, if I'm feeling emotions coming up, is to just say, wow, I noticed that I'm feeling really sad.
Yeah.
And if I can say it out loud, then it'll usually
solve. Absolutely. Yeah, stating those emotions. Yeah. All right, so that was body language, nervousness, that area. I'll be around afterwards. We can talk more about that too. Let's move to eye contact. So eye contact, there's a whole variety of different eye contact. The way you look at people is very important. I had two friends growing up. One friend would, this is how he would talk to me. He'd have some kind of thought or story he's telling, and then he'd come down when he's actually looking at me, blink a whole bunch, not really talk, and come back up here, talk about something else, come down, blink a whole bunch, go back up there. So he was kind of looking at me, I don't know, maybe. The other friend, Adrian, he'd had very good eye contact, just eye contact. Ed would talk this close, I'd step away, he'd step back in, step away, step back in. It was too much. So you can either have too much eye contact or too little eye contact. So what's the right amount of eye contact? Yeah. So the important part about eye contact is that first thing, you establish a relationship with whoever you're talking to, one person or a sea of an audience. You establish and have that conversation with your eyes first before you start speaking. So before every thought or every sentence, you make that eye contact. That's the first part. The second part is at the end of your thoughts or sentences, look at them again. Why do you look at them? To see the effect that you've had, that sentence or thought that you've delivered. To listen. That's what it's about. Those are the two parts. I can start eye contact here and talk about a thought or something I've seen, and then I land it with you. And I'm checking in to see how it goes. In the middle, it doesn't really matter. What matters is that you create that relationship, tell them something, and see how they responded to it. And when an audience gets larger, you can do the same thing. This is a medium-sized audience. There's larger ones of 500-600 people sometimes. Finding 1, 2, 3, 4, 5, or just 3 people in the audience that you can talk to and make eye contact with them rather than just spraying your eye contact everywhere. I can do this the whole time and make eye contact, but I'm not having a connection to any of you. Does anybody feel a connection to me doing this? I'm making eye contact, though. So make eye contact with individuals, and people will feel that in the audience. Notes. What if you have notes? How do you make you have to read at the same time. How do you have effective eye contact at the same time? Usually, people read like this. They go down, and they start the sentence down, first couple of words. Many speakers do the opposite when reading from formal texts. They begin reading, and then they come up in the middle of a sentence, check, are they listening? Okay, great, I'm going to go back down. And finish up the sentence down, looking at the page. But we need to switch that around. So it's called the up-down-up technique. You read the first couple of words by looking down, many speakers do in your head, come up, deliver the first couple of words to your audience with eye contact, many speakers do. You can come down in the middle of a sentence as long as you want to. Do the opposite when reading, and I come back at the end from formal texts, and I check in. What did that thought mean to my audience? Are they responding at all? Yes, no, maybe not. And this is different from how we usually do it. The temptation is to stay down in the text the whole time. So you're going to practice that. Get into groups of 2, and person A is going to deliver the up, down, up technique. And person B, do not let them speak further if they're not looking at you at the beginning or at the end of the sentences. Only then are they allowed to continue the next sentence.
So you can use the content we've given you for this. So for instance, if you look at the top of any one of these pages, there's a brief description, like a short paragraph. So read a couple of sentences of those paragraphs if you want, or you can use the script that you had this morning. Totally up to you.
All right, let's sit back down. Let's bring it back. How was that? How was that for everybody? We got somebody back here. Let's give our attention to the individual speaking. Sorry, let's give our attention over here. Oh, yeah, good body language. Yes, yeah. No, absolutely, that's fine, as long as you're not just looking up there the whole time, up there. The important thing is you can look up, recollect, but you just start and end those thoughts and sentences with people. That's the most important part. Any discoveries during this last exercise? Back here.
It's not a discovery as much as a question. So most of us are sitting around a council table that's an open-ended view. Mm-hmm.
Making eye Who's the most important? Who do you want to reach?
With counsel.
With counsel. Yeah. But if you don't speak to the others sitting there, what is the result of that? If you don't. Yeah. So it's about the audience that you want to reach. You're making eye contact with that audience that you want to reach. Yeah. Any other questions or yeah? Or discovery. Yeah.
I discovered that.
Okay, let's listen up.
Doing the up, down as the reader, I actually was more present to what I was saying, and I was kind of actually engaged with it in a way that I don't recall when I'm doing the other opposite.
Yeah, so she said that while using this technique, she felt more engaged and actually connected with the person in front of her.
And with the material that I was reading.
And with the material that you were reading.
I was sort of hearing it that.
Yeah. Yeah. Any other questions or discoveries around that? Back there.
Just as a personal experience, that I found that the natural reason why we look down at the beginning and the end is because it's punctuated. It's easy to find.
Yeah.
And when I do my script, what I do is I highlight the middle of the sentences with red, yellow, green, and then that way I'm able to focus on.
That's great.
You know, that I can look up on those sentences.
Yeah, yeah. That's a great technique. I might steal that. Yeah.
It depends how much time you have.
Yes.
If you have time, if you're doing a big talk, and it's, yeah, great. I mean, highlighting is important. John will talk about that with expression. A lot of folks, though, they're walking in or they're handed a bio to read, like ours this morning. This is a great technique for that. Or if you have speaking notes. Speaking notes are great for the up-down-up technique. You've got a nice set of condensed notes, hopefully following that script. Look down, gather your thinking. The key is you got to force yourself up. If you don't do that, you lose that initial eye contact, and all of a sudden the audience is wondering, oh, OK, time to check my iPhone again.
Mm-hmm. Something here. So we have over here, when he has a presentation, he doesn't write down every single word. He has elements that you speak to. And notice that also when others do that, that they don't write every single thing down. So when it comes to writing your scripts and presentation, should you memorize every single word? No. What happens if you do? I didn't get the right word, and so what am I talking about? I don't have every single word of plan. And you stiffen up. You become a robot. So what parts should you memorize? If at all?
The punchline.
You mean the call to action? So your message and the first sentence of your main points. The rest you can talk to because you know what you're talking about. You've done preparation for it. Talk to it rather than memorizing every single word that you have. Yes? So if you're handed something that you have to deliver with a lot of content. Yeah. By using that up-down-up technique. If you use that, there's content that has to be delivered that you cannot miss. Use that. Because you can, why are you in the room if you can just throw it up on the screen? If people can just read it off the PowerPoint? If there's a word slide and you're standing there and just reading off of it. Why are you talking? Why just let them read it? But if you have something, you're delivering something, make sure you're making connection with people while you're delivering it. That's what it's about then. The content's important, but the way the content comes across and means something to people is if you connect with them.
If you're preparing content for elected officials, if that's what you do, or for anyone, a couple quick guidelines I can offer you is increase your font size, like double it right away, for sure. You probably all know that already. Underline your keywords. Make their job easy. If you're a speaker, and you're handed a speech 5 minutes beforehand, it's going to be tough, even if you use up, down, up. Let's be honest about that.
Yeah.
The key, though, is, I mean, the ability that you, or the degree that you can, is try to even take those 5 minutes and go through what's important here. Has this writer shown me what's important? You hit those points, and they'll forgive you for a lot of mistakes. But let's be clear. Reading a speech that you're given 5 minutes beforehand is not an easy task. Mm-hmm. We can give you a couple of tips around it. It's going to be, it won't be as effective as if you even had 20 minutes to read it first.
Mm-hmm. Let me also shortly tell you about making mistakes while you're having your speech. This is what usually happens. You make a mistake, you stumble over a word, you say a wrong fact, or just shortly stumble or something. And this is the first arrow that you're shooting in your foot. The second arrow is you going, oh, stupid, in your mind. Or saying, oh, I'm so sorry, and going back, rather than just moving on. Can't tell you how many times I've seen somebody present, and if they acknowledge the mistake, only then I knew that they made a mistake. That happens so often. I've made a whole bunch of mistakes. I haven't acknowledged them today. And I won't ever, unless I should actually apologize to you for something that I've done. That's when I'm going to apologize. Yes, two more questions.
Yeah, this is a mistake. When Kate was reading, she did stumble, but because she started and ended the sentence looking at me, it made no difference to her sending the message to me.
Yeah.
Where if she had stumbled when not looking at me, I would have probably stopped and listening to her.
Right. So, Kate? Kate made a mistake in the middle of the sentence speaking, but because she started and ended her thoughts, it didn't matter. She just moved on through it. Back there, yes.
Are we ready for the news reporter who pushes the microphone and the camera into your face and asks you for a comment?
Right, so is the question is how to deal with that? Okay. So when it comes to media or being on screen, the first thing to know is that it's another form of different communication. If I'm standing in front of an audience, a larger audience like this, everybody can see me head to toe. So these are my tools I can use. If you have a screen that is smaller and all you have is this area, this is the only area of tools that you should be using. I mean, you can bring your hands awkwardly up into frame if you want to. It's up to you. But these are all the tools at your disposal. So if you want to show some expression about what you're feeling, what you're saying, show that expression on your face. You still have your voice at your disposal, so train that for your voice. Another important thing to deal with media, if you know you're going to be interviewed, somebody's going to be asking your questions, prepare messages. Prepare 5 to 10 messages for different topics or areas that they're going to ask you about. Those are going to be used as sound bites. Whatever you say is going to be used. The CEO of BlackBerry was asked by a journalist, is BlackBerry in a death spiral? He said, no, BlackBerry is not in a death spiral. That was printed as a title. What do you think when you read that? Yeah, so think ahead. What are you going to be asked? What are the messages that I want to portray in those moments? One more, yeah. Look at them. I mean, if I'm sitting at home and everybody's talking off and then suddenly somebody's looking at me to the camera, it's more about who's your audience, the people watching at home. And so since you're being asked by the journalist, just talk that way. Unless it is where there's somebody in the studio and you're off in a different studio, both facing the camera, that obviously you look into the camera then. Yeah, but look at the person off to the side. All right, we're going to move on now into pace. Pace is important because it shows your audience what is important. Pace is how slowly or fast you deliver ideas and words. So if I started off my whole presentation here and said, okay, today we're going to talk about body language, eye contact, pace, and expression. These are all parts of presence. So let's start off with body language. The most important part about body language is that you connect with your audience. Have open gestures, are connected, remove boundaries from the side, and take a seat, make sure you're grounded. Take that moment, you can't process anything I'm saying. So what's important is pauses. We're scared of pauses. Pauses are very scary because nobody's talking, they're just looking. But guess what? They're already looking at you, so it doesn't matter. Pauses help you discover what you need to say next, how to effectively say the next thing, and gives your audience time to process what you just said. If you don't give them the gift of the pause, they won't process it, and they won't be able to engage as strongly. So if your goal is to have your audience be disconnected, by all means, rush through. Go ahead. But if you give them the pause, that's where more connection happens. But we don't think about that. Also, how fast or slow you deliver shows your audience what's important too. So if I'm talking fairly quickly, going through some ideas, and then slow down and really emphasize these couple of words, I'm showing you what is important. I'm showing you that what I just said is of a monumental impact. So allowing your audience to understand what you think is important in what you're saying. These are all tools that you have at all of your disposal. You can use at any time. So what you're going to do now, either the script that you wrote this morning or that paragraph that you just delivered for the up-down-up technique, go through that and in each sentence underline what word is the most important, and the whole paragraph or paragraphs underline what sentences or bits are the most important. Once you've done that, turn to your partner and deliver that. Deliver that showing what's important in this whole structure. Thanks. I get so passionate.
I'll just drive it next time.
Cool.
Take it easy. I got lost in mine, too.
Yeah. I should have done it for you. And also notate the pauses. Make a line where you're going to have a pause or two lines where you're going to have a big pause. Notate that as well. All right, now share that with your partner. Share the section that you notated and try to hit those beats, those words, or the pauses. What did you just notate and try to deliver that? All right, finish that off. Take a seat and bring it back. All right, so the final elements we have is expression. Expression, we just talked about this, how pace and all this work you're putting in is you're putting the work to make your audience lean in, to help them simply understand what's going on, and to help them understand what's important. I mean, you know what's important, you can just read through it, but you're putting in the effort of pace and expression to help your audience understand what's important, or how do I feel about this? And that's what's part of expression. So expression should be going back to being natural, being authentic to who you are. If I came in here and started talking like Martin Luther King, you would know that I'm lying, that I'm not portraying something other who I am not at all. So it has to be natural, but it's heightened because it's a heightened situation. There's a larger room. You're still dialoguing to people back there versus just to one person in front of you. So it must be heightened, your expressions, your gestures. If you know that you're somebody who's stiff and doesn't show a lot of expression in your face, it's just paralysis going on here, there's no expression being shown, or you don't use gestures, try next time you're speaking in front of people or in a meeting, dialing that up to 8 or 10, trying something out, failing boldly. And the important thing about this is to have somebody in the audience, in the group, that you trust to give you feedback. So what you do is you ask the person, look, I am trying this new thing, this new element. Can you give me feedback on how that came across? So you understand the perception of what you just tried. So you have somebody that can help you out to get that kind of expression or body language that you want. So when it comes to expression, you want to also prepare, plan ahead. How do you want to express different elements of the script? You've got your pace, how slow or fast you're going to say things. But now, how are you going to express what you feel or what you think about every single element in the script to your audience? Remember, people are mirrors. You show them what you feel, what you think people should believe about these sections, and then they will receive that. They will know then what you feel about it. So we're going to do another exercise. Write down in your script, next to different lines or thoughts, how you want them to come across. What do you want people to feel about what you're saying there? And then you're going to again deliver it to your partner. Yeah. All right. Let's bring it back. Finish off that sentence or thought that you spoke, and we'll bring it back. Okay, a few last things that we're going to do. We're going to see if somebody wants to present their scripts that they have. Allow a little bit of room for any other leftover questions, and then do a call to action. So, does anybody have their script and want to present it all using the elements that we went through today? There's a hand that went up there. Yeah? All right, come on up. That's fine.
Yeah, at the mic.
The mic. You can turn it around.
Okay, well, my mother didn't raise a coward, maybe a fool, but not a coward. Okay. this is on a presentation that I actually have to make next week to the business community, because it's Heritage Week the week after, and I'd like to get them involved, just to give you a little bit of a background on that. Heritage is not just about old stuff. It tells a story of who we are, where we've come from, and it can inspire wonder and anchor our communities, and it connects us. I believe that we need to change and transform the way we think about heritage. Let me tell you how we can achieve this. First thing I would like you to think about is your business and how your business relates to heritage. And then I'm going to be a little bit more interactive with them and say, how many of you feel that heritage plays a role in gaining more customer to your doorstep? Yes, please. Yes. You would believe it. There are studies that demonstrate that tourism and heritage are linked to economic development, and that means more money in your jeans. What activities will be happening at Heritage Week? I have a list of them, but rather than go over them one by one, I'd like you to have a moment, look at these activities, and think about how you can contribute, and you can inspire your customers to take an active role in learning about what's going on within the four blocks that we call Historic Ladner. So let's just take a moment, have a look at this, and create some good table activities on this. Because at the end, I'm going to be sitting right over there, and I would love for you to sit down with me, and we can talk about ways that we can integrate heritage into getting more customers coming into your stores. Thank you.
All right, give her a hand. We got a book for you. Yeah, yeah. Okay, we have time for one more person. And yeah, there you go. We're not going to go through the entire one. Just go from your grabber down to your first point.
Grabber down to my first point?
Yeah.
Or whatever you want to say in a short and snappy.
Being an elected official isn't easy. It can be quite isolating. My friend Sarah and I here have been talking about potentially having a mentorship program where people of who have more experience as elected officials could help individuals who are new to the game. We're convinced that it will encourage shared knowledge among councils, between councils, and might empower a new generation of elected officials.
Great. Give her a hand.
Excellent.
Okay, we have time for one or two more questions. Anybody have any questions left over from today? Oh, yeah. Book.
Hearing none, let's move on.
Let's move on. Oh, one question. So ums, some people say maybe every three, four sentences, and that's fine. The problem with ums and ahs is if they distract. You're sitting and hearing somebody, oh, here comes another you're counting the ums that they're doing. You know the ums that are happening. So a way to avoid that is, first thing is breath. Take a breath before or after sentences, gives us time to think about it. Slow down. If you slow down, then you won't as often. And the last method that you should use, but I've used it before for myself, is put a little elastic around your wrist, and every single time you say it, you snap. You associate pain with the Okay, so thank you for taking part in these exercises. We went through a lot today. Yes, thank you.
So if you want to get better at this, which I know that you do, you have to do something about it. I know I told you that in the first part of this presentation this morning. You got to get uncomfortable. Record yourself either through audio or video. You all have the technology. I've seen it sitting on your tables. A smartphone will do. If you really want to know how you sound and how you come across, turn that phone around, hit record, say something into it, and play it back. It's a beautiful thing. It's called real-time feedback. Then you have to do something about it. So reflect on it, and then make a change, and fail boldly, as John said. Thanks so much.
Yep. Have a good evening.
Thank you, Travis and John. That was fantastic, and I am very uncomfortable right now, so this is good. You did your job. We are on a break for our next half hour, so take the opportunity to enjoy some refreshments outside for 30 minutes, and please be back in your rooms at your next session at 3 o'clock. Thank you.